I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast. Coming up this week, we'll be joined by former England cricket captain Mike Gatting, as he tells us how cricket fans can get involved in helping out their local clubs. We'll look back at some of the week's burning issues in football with our special guest Toby Gillis, and we'll look ahead to this weekend's Malaysian Grand Prix. Well, we'll start with football, and I'm delighted to be joined by the sports broadcaster Toby Gillis. And Toby, we'll start with the retirement of Michael Owen. He's decided to hang up his boots at the end of this season. Are you surprised by that decision?
No surprise at all. I don't think when he joined Stoke, he would have hoped to be playing football on a far more regular basis than he's managed so far this season. I think it's just 7 appearances, just the one goal, and most of those will have been off the bench, you know, for sort of final 5-10 minutes. But, you know, he's spoken a lot about it this week. He's talked about how he's never, ever been fully fit since he was aged about 19. He's now 33. I don't think it's a huge surprise to see a man with all those sorts of injury problems and who's not really getting much football calling it a day.
As a Liverpool fan, my favourite moment from him was the 2001 FA Cup final, in which Liverpool were absolutely battered for 75 minutes. And I remember turning to my dad and saying, "Ah, well, when Arsenal scored, that's gone then. You know, they've deserved that goal." And then Owen, on his own, won the cup final with 2 late goals.
And Stefan Onsho.
And Stefan Onsho with
the handball.
Well, yeah, Stefan Onsho was our designated handball player that season. He was allowed to handle the ball with impunity. What sticks out for you in his career?
Yeah, that was sensational, wasn't it? It showed that blistering raw pace that he had when he scored those 2 goals, the sort of breakaway to win it. And you always remember that huge smile that he seemed to have. But I think for me, he seemed to save maybe not his best performances, but his best efforts for England. I always felt that England was where he felt that he wanted to be. And I think that was possibly behind the very controversial move to Manchester United towards the end of his career. But it's sort of punctuated by 4 moments his career for me in terms of on the football field, rather than, you know, when we've seen him countless times getting injured. You know, there was that FA Cup. But there was also before that the goal against Argentina, which he will probably be remembered for. I would imagine it's his most played back goal. You know, we see it every time England play, seems to me, that they seem to show that. There was also the goal against Manchester City for Manchester United in the derby that won it, where he had that ridiculous celebration in stoppage time, I think it was, that sent Mark Hughes absolutely ballistic. And then there's the one other England performance.
The hat-trick.
Away to Germany. The hat-trick. Absolutely. He's just absolutely sensational when he was at his best. For me, he's probably the best England forward I've seen. And I've watched people like Rooney play.
Yeah.
I've watched the very back end of Lineker's career, and I know he didn't score as many goals as Lineker did, but, you know, it says a huge amount about him, and he is a bit of a hero of mine, I think, because, you know, I sort of grew up in my sort of younger to teenage years. He was the man doing it, you know, and it was absolutely sensational watching him. And he just seemed to provide something exciting every time I watched him. So I love him. I appreciate him. I'm not one of these that's, you know, here to make jokes about him, because he's a hero to me.
Yeah.
An absolute legend. And I'm gutted to say that he didn't break the all-time England goalscoring record. But when you look at the players that he's behind, Charlton, Lineker, Greaves, it's not a bad
company to be in, is it? No, 40 goals for England and 220 goals at club level. We'll move on to something a bit more unsavoury. This week, the challenge by Callum McManaman, the Wigan forward, on the Newcastle defender Masadio Haidara, a challenge that left the Frenchman in hospital with knee ligament damage. But McManaman not punished on the day, and retrospectively won't be punished by the FA, because they say one of the officials saw the incident, even though that wasn't the referee, Mark Halsey. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, we've got to say that we're incredibly pleased that a 20-year-old footballer has not suffered potentially, you know, career-ending damage. But even it doesn't appear that it's particularly that serious. So first things first, we've got to be thankful for Haidara that he's okay.
Yeah,
it was a shocking challenge. Had he been sent off, I'm not totally convinced that three games would have been enough. But that would have been, you know, it's violent conduct, isn't it? I think is what it's officially called off. And so he would have been banned for the three games. I think that would have been the very, very least, because had the referee seen it, he'd have been sent off.
He'd have
There's
been off,
absolutely
yeah.
no argument. And I believe that Mark Halsey actually went and apologised to Alan Pardew that he didn't send him off at half time. So he'd obviously got an opportunity to see it again. But what I don't understand is how, if one of the assistants did spot it, you know, the assistant's job is, you know, it does what it says on the tin, assist.
Yeah.
Assist the referee and say to him, that was a sending off challenge. And the referee is going to have to take his word for it, isn't it? Because you don't, if your assistant comes and is completely unequivocal about something like that and says, you've missed it, it is a sending off challenge, he has to go, then he should have been sent off. So what is going on with that assistant?
Yeah, absolutely.
I have absolutely no idea. But then you've got that separate question of, well, is the FA's ruling whereby if an assistant or a referee or an official in general sees it and decides not to do anything, is it acceptable for them to say, well, that's the rules, we can't do anything now? I think we've got to look at this again, because time and time this subject comes up and we sit here and we moan about it. And the only people that seem to think it makes sense are those within the FA. It's baffling, it's gobsmacking, and it's got to be changed.
Well, there are a few things here, aren't there? The first thing is that the FA say that they got together with the PFA, they got together with the Premier League, and they discussed these issues and they were all agreed upon. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I understand the principle of if a referee or a linesman has seen an incident, the FA don't want to be seen to be challenging those decisions.
Understandable.
And therefore undermining the officials. What's quirky about this situation, I guess, is that we're normally talking about off-the-ball incidents with this kind of thing, a cheeky elbow or a fight that might have happened off the ball.
Yeah.
It's rare to have such a violent challenge on the ball and for the referee not to see it. But you are absolutely spot on in that the strange thing about this situation is that you had a referee that couldn't see it, which isn't his fault, but you had a linesman who TV replays show was not only well-placed to see it, was looking at it.
Yeah.
He's made a judgment.
But not just that, he's admitted he saw it.
Yeah, he's made a judgment that Callum McManaman got to the ball first and then the players collided.
Well, that's true, of course.
And if that's his judgment, that's his judgment. It's wrong, but if that's his judgment,
I mean, the rules don't state that if you get the ball, it's not a foul. That is not the case.
Yeah.
People talk about that. Well, he got the ball.
Yeah.
It's actually not what
it's
the rule is.
It's excessive force, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was out of control. Look, we're not here to chastise Callum McManaman. I don't think that he did it on purpose. I don't think there is pretty much any footballer, possibly with the exception of that admitted one about Roy Keane that everybody will go back to, that goes out deliberately to injure an opponent.
Yeah.
I refuse to believe that ever. I do think it's unfortunate that phrase, he's not that type of player. I really hate that phrase because I think, you know, I don't think anybody's that type of player. Come out, say, actually, he was in the wrong there. It wasn't good. It doesn't look good. Just admit it as a manager. It's not right. I think what Dave Whelan came out and said afterwards was an absolute joke, where he said that they didn't even need to apologise to Newcastle. Well, actually, when I do something accidental that affects someone else, I tend to apologise. Yeah. So
if you turn around and knock scalding coffee over somebody,
exactly,
you apologise.
It's absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? So what Dave Whelan's doing, you know, to change that basic human reaction of apologising even if it's an accident, for a man whose career was ended, you know, by an injury suffered during a game, for Dave Whelan to come out and say that was baffling. But I find the whole thing baffling. I think the FA have got to look at it again. And I think that there's got to be a massive change here.
We'll round up today by talking about managerial sackings, because we're up to 33 now, say the LMA. 33 managers have lost their jobs this season. Three of those at Blackburn Rovers. Michael Appleton jettisoned after just 67 days. His predecessor, Henning Berg, went after 57 days. What on earth is going on at Ewood Park? It's crazy.
I don't know where to start. It's just absolutely bonkers, isn't it? Who is making the decisions? I think, you know, nobody seems to really know who's making the decisions, who hires these people, who have they got informing them of the right decisions, you know, in the first place? Who have they got that are football people standing there going, this is the right person, or these are the sorts of things you need to think about? I mean, Michael Appleton, I found an odd appointment anyway. He'd done not great, really, at Blackpool in quite trying circumstances, admittedly. He probably thought that it was going to be a walk in the park at Blackburn by comparison.
Yeah,
but
he was.
You know, it's ridiculous. And then obviously Henningberg was an odd one, had, you know, not done so well in.
And
in
somebody who'd openly criticised the running of the club before he got the job.
Yeah,
the Appleton thing, I think, is interesting that you mentioned that, because he hadn't got an amazing rep from what he'd done at Portsmouth, and obviously he wasn't at Blackpool long enough. But he's widely regarded in the game as an intelligent young coach. I remember speaking to him when he was amongst the coaching team at West Brom, and Roy Hodgson used to speak of him, you know, very highly. You know, and he spoke very intelligently about football. So I think he is a coach that I think long term will do very well. My guess would be that one of the guys in the hierarchy at Blackburn is Derek Shaw. Now, he used to be, if I'm not mistaken, the chairman at Preston. And he would know Michael from when he was at Preston. It seems to be he was the impetus behind Appleton's appointment. Other members of the board then twigged what was going on, hadn't been consulted, which is crazy, and then went, no, we don't like him, and then binned him.
It's a difficult situation for him, because it wasn't really working on the pitch. I mean, they are in definite danger of relegation from the Championship.
4 points above the drop zone.
It's a real problem for Blackburn, and you know, you find it amazing when you consider the amount of money they spent on Jordan Rhodes, who is still scoring bucket loads of goals for them. You know, they don't really have a problem with scoring goals, so You've got to think that what's going on behind the scenes must be affecting things, because if you've got somebody with that sort of goal-scoring prowess, you know, you tend to say the teams at the bottom that are going to stay up are the ones that are able to score. So there's definitely huge amounts of problem. I think with Appleton, you know, just to step very slightly away from Blackburn now, I do think he's got to be very, very careful. If he's offered another job, he's got to be careful what he takes. Because he's now had three troubled clubs for very differing reasons. There was the financial problems with Portsmouth. There's then the issues with the chairman at Blackpool. Yeah. And then just a comedy of errors generally.
You don't
Blackburn.
Want to end up being classed as a firefighter before you've barely started.
It's not just that, but he needs somewhere where it's easy to manage. I do think that you've got to, as a young coach, you've got to be able to focus on your primary job, which is to go out, get your team playing football. If there are too many off-field distractions, if you don't know who your boss is, if you don't know who's with you and who's against you, there's a major problem. So he needs a club that's together next. And I don't think that he should just take the first job that's available to him, depending on what it is now, which I think a lot of young coaches are possibly guilty of doing. You know, if they're out of work, I've got to get another job, I've got to get another job. He needs to be very, very careful with who he selects as another as his next job. As far as Blackburn are concerned, well, for a start, the manager position appears to be a poison chalice now. You know, you get 2 months, maybe, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
And who'd take it? I mean, it's still...
Well, with a decent rep would take it?
You know, you'd think that they might have to have... I just wonder whether Danny Murphy might be the man, at least to the end of the season. He's somebody that's, you know, again, widely regarded as a knowledgeable player, an intelligent person.
Yeah.
Somebody who was frozen out at the last few weeks of the Appleton tenure, I suppose. If you can call something that's last 67 days of tenure. But I just wonder whether at least to the end of the season, you know, there's not long to go now. There's probably less than 67 days, so he should be fine with it.
He'll last at least that long.
And I just wonder whether he might be the man. And, you know, he's gone to Blackburn. He probably knew what was going on there when he made that decision when he left Fulham. I just think that, you know, give somebody the opportunity who's inside the club, who at least knows the players and probably has their respect, and just see where he goes, and then that might be a decent sort of first manager's job, depending on where, especially if they were to be in League One. But actually, having said what we've just said, you know, it would be a horrendously difficult job, but Blackburn is a huge profile club. Let's not forget.
And they've spent money. We shouldn't forget. Yankees are spending money
but
on that club.
But let's not forget, this is
one of
four or five clubs, is it now, that have won the Premier League?
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely crazy to see the situation they're in. But they've still got that in the not-too-distant past. They are still a massive draw. It's still a massive club on a relative scale. You'd think there would be managers who are out of work that would be interested purely because of the size of the club. But you would do it, you know, at least twice you'd have to think about it before accepting it.
We'll switch our attention to cricket now. Next month, thousands of volunteers will help to spruce up the facilities at their local cricket clubs as part of the NatWest Cricket Force initiative. To find out more, our reporter Lee Peters caught up with former England cricket captain Mike Gatting.
Well, I'm here at Lords speaking to former England skipper Mike Gatting, and we're looking ahead to the NatWest Cricket Force weekend, which is taking place on the 5th, 6th and 7th of April. Mike, NatWest Cricket Force, and now it's been going on for years. What is it?
Well, it's basically a bit of a self-help tool, really. It's a self-help for the clubs, and what it really is volunteers and actually new people from the local area coming to help sort of smarten the club up and just do a little bit here and there, just to make it a nicer place for the community to go and sort of play cricket and actually just show people where it is and actually just sort of say, well, look, here we are, we're a nice club, come and meet us, come and help us, we've got a lovely facility, we're just smartening up here now, be a part of it. And the other thing, I suppose, is it's somewhere where you can actually do things for not a great deal of money.
Certainly. So what has the project achieved for the 2,000 or so cricket clubs that have taken part over the past 12 years?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, what it achieves is many things, and I sort of suppose intimated a few of those in the fact that the club becomes known in the community because people obviously start talking to the community, and therefore it actually engenders new people coming down to the club, so you might get some new members. It might be that members actually who come down on a very irregular basis will all of a sudden start coming down on a more regular basis because they actually think the club's quite nice now when they've finished putting in the new kitchen or doing the painting in the changing rooms or doing that. And also when clubs like this go out to the local community too, they find sponsors. So local builders come in perhaps and help them out. And I think on a lot of occasions it's about actually getting to know the community, getting the people to know where the club is, to show them what a nice place it is. And also, as I say, more overtly is to actually really sort of encourage other people to invest in the club. And I think in general, most of the clubs end up with one or two new sponsors every time this sort of weekend comes about. And if they don't, well, at least the people who have actually helped, whether it be, you know, painters with paint or I've put many a patios down, so loads of stones and stuff for the patio, or roofs or kitchens, or just many things that are needed on a day like that, whether it be paintbrushes and, you know, all sorts of things. So it's many things that happen on a day like that, and it just gives the whole community a chance to get involved. And of course, I might add that the local sort of councils, because, you know, they're interested on people that make the effort to actually if you like, try and make a facility better on their own, and it doesn't cost them any money, so they want to give them support too. So what with the local papers, local community, it really does make it then a community hub that everybody can be proud of.
So just how important is the weekend of the 5th, 6th and 7th?
It's hugely important. As I said, you know, without really being sort of too base about it, it saves the club an awful lot of money. You know, you go out to builders or people, you know, you talk about time spent in sort of labour on doing things. You know, if you actually look in your local clubs and you just send an email around, have we got any plumbers, have we got any electricians? If we haven't, have we got a local man who might just come down just on this one weekend just to help out because his son actually is a member, or his, you know, he would like to come a member. So it is quite important, because when you think £1,000 or £2,000 or £3,000 a year that this might save, or even more, is so important to a club, especially in times like that are around now. So it's about actually, you know, saving clubs money, but also at the same time making it a better place and a much more nicer experience for people to come down to.
And finally this week, we'll take a look ahead to the Malaysian Grand Prix. Here's our reporter, Johnny Hart.
The second F1 Grand Prix of the season takes place in Malaysia this weekend, with Lotus's Kimi Raikkonen looking to build on his win in Australia a week ago. The Finnish driver, less than 0.02 of a second quicker than reigning champion Sebastian Vettel in second practice. Melbourne last week saw Raikkonen win emphatically by 12 seconds from Ferrari's Fernando Alonso, with Vettel back in third, a further 10 seconds behind. And Raikkonen says he's expecting a tough race.
It's nice to come back here. The circuit is nice, so we know how it's going to be more or less here. So it usually gives a good race, and that's the main thing. And hopefully we can have another good weekend and score good points.
The race begins on Sunday at 8 o'clock UK time. I'm Johnny Hart.
Well, that's all for this week. From Toby Gillis and myself, Kevin Hatchard, it's goodbye for now.